Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, as you can see, we're killing the penalty on this one. We're down two men. We're shorthanded. Not a problem. We're going to kill this, and it's going to be more than 2 minutes, though. So put your seatbelts on, and we got some stuff to talk about. We're talking conspiracy theories this week. We're talking some wrestling. We're talking some other stuff, and away we go. So, Thomas,
yo,
big shoes to fill. Usually I tell Chris he's got big shoes to fill when you're not here. So you got some big shoes to fill. Talk about Goon God. Talk about a sponsor. We got a great email this week. It's a little different. So go ahead.
All right. The email of the week is brought to you by Goon Guard. Goon Guard's mouth guards are scientifically proven to provide up to 2 times the impact absorption of traditional mouth guards. Their patented fitted material provides a lockdown fit so that it stays in place at all times, while it also makes it easy to breathe and speak. Goon Guard can be remolded as many times as you need, and you can visit them online at goonguard.com. And Andy, I believe, is the 1973 podcast still the...
1973 is the code. Promo code. Yep, I'll drop it in right before the email. So, Bradford, big shoes. We're talking about something that's near and dear to your heart, the conspiracy theory. So, take it away.
Yeah, I've been booed out of so many Thanksgiving meals. So. For office conversations around the water cooler, because I hear one little word and whoop, there we go. So this week's email comes from Hazel. She's from Elko, Nevada. A really interesting email. She says, "I hope this finds you all well. I'm a devoted listener, so thank you for being a devoted listener. We appreciate it. And I've always been fascinated by this insightful discussions you bring to the table. Your recent episode, Brad. Yours truly talked about Taylor Swift were particularly eye-opening." So she just asked some questions about conspiracy theories, origins and evolution, psychology behind the belief, impact on society, debunking myths, media's role, so on. The email that she, it's a very well-written, worded email. Man, I could talk hours if we want to just go down a rabbit hole. But the psychology behind it, the impact on society, this and that. I mean, that is like a serious research project. If we wanted to really, really, really get into it. But, so I'll start right with, I think the psychology behind it is we see events happening before us, whether that's 9/11, the moon landing, this flat earth theory, really it's not a flat earth, it's the filament. But like I said, we can go down this rabbit hole. But I don't think that, people are looking for like an explanation, so to speak. I think we're looking for these coincidences that occur. And then once your brain starts connecting these dots with these big coincidences, these quote unquote conspiracy theories are born. And the more coincidences, the more truth they tend to have, and the more they kind of spread, like wildfire. I'm a fan of the Taylor Swift one. Do I think she's a witch? I don't know. I'm not a witch expert. You know what I mean? I watched her performance in the theater, and I've listened to a lot of podcasts about this specific topic. I've watched a few YouTubes, and there are a lot of coincidences that would lead you to believe that the famous mega pop star Taylor Swift might be a witch, or at least participate in witchcraft. I would like to just point out, she does look very much like the daughter of a certain somebody who started the Church of Satan back in the 80s. But also, talking about, satanic worship and stuff like that, there was a huge satanic scare in the 80s where anytime anything happened in the world, the media, conspiracy theorists, people with any kind of voice blame Satanism. And I feel like we're kind of in that. Again, anytime something happens on TV, the Super Bowl, a movie, a concert, we're back in this great satanic scare. So we got to be careful that we don't just call everything Satanism and satanic occultism, because then stuff that really is happening gets lost in the wash. We're talking about coincidences. She looks like the founder of the Church of Satan. She holds a concert in SoFi Stadium. Have you guys looked at SoFi from an aerial view?
No.
It's very interesting. The design of SoFi Stadium, it is basically, hold on, let me pull it up. It's the Eye of Ra, which is an Egyptian symbol that symbolizes power, fury, and violence. The whole stadium is designed that way. She holds a live concert, records it, and then puts it out in theaters for all of us to take our kids, myself included. Lucas fell asleep, though. He didn't see the Eye of Ra. But once I saw that, because they do the aerial shot, you know, in that movie, once I saw that, I was like, oh, crap. Like, I've already had counted on one hand all these other witchcraft-related, occult, satanic-related, you know, coincidences in her concert, and then the Eye of Ra just kind of pulled it all together. And I was like, how do you not see this? Like, and so I call them normies. Normies are the ones that call me a crazy tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist. Normies can't wrap their head around that maybe there's something else going on.
So I want to ask the professor. He is the compass that keeps us on true north. Tom, if you have a conspiracy theory, what is your favorite conspiracy theory? You had to pick one. What is your favorite one that you're probably the most intrigued with, that when you see it come up on TikTok or something on social media? What is it?
Well, first of all, I want to tell Taylor Swift that was Brad, and his expressed views are not ours. So if you're going to put a spell on anyone, do it to him. You know, we're no,
just in case.
My favorite conspiracy theorist is like the original one that I can remember as a kid. It's the moon landing. That's the one that it still to this day holds up, where, I mean, it's, people still talk about it today. So it's like you're going on, I mean, like what, 65, 70 years, whatever it is. And so that to me is the biggest one.
So I there's two ways I can go with this, because I love a good conspiracy theory. I love the deep dives with stuff. I think it opens your mind, kind of like Brad and I were talking. There are things that are hidden in plain sight, and you're so obvious. They're so obvious that people are like, that's not possible. I think America as a whole, when you have guys like Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio at World War II buying in and leaving their pro career to go serve in the military, everybody was on the same page. But I think the line in the sand for America as a whole with society and saying, wait a minute, something's wrong here, was the Kennedy assassination. That's my timeline in the sand of, before that, everybody bought war bonds, everybody, whatever the government said, they were like, yeah, that's with the USA. And, you know, USA, USA, like that. But after the Kennedy assassination, people were like, hey, I like that guy. What the hell happened? That can't be right. Those bullets don't bounce like that. Things like, and then I think from there, the trust in what was fed to you is changed a little bit. That's where you have all the counterculture started after that, the hippie movement, you know, all the underground stuff, underground music, underground trends, that all started. And then I think where we've evolved to now is because we have technology with cell phones and TikTok especially, and there's a conspiracy about TikTok, why they want to take that down because of all the information that's out there and the way people present it. It does open that, I'd hate to use a Tony Khan term, a forbidden door that's never been opened before, with like-minded people saying, hey, listen, if you think that's crazy, how about this? Mm-hmm. So going back to the moon landing, the Stanley Kubrick theory of him doing a favor for the government, and his deal was supposedly that you can never alter any of my films ever. Whatever I present, if I do this for you, whatever I make, you have to present it as my art. So we get to Eyes Wide Shut. Supposedly it was too close to certain things. They cut out a half an hour out of the movie, which breaks his contract, because there was some weird stuff in there. I don't know. We'll never get to see it. And the guy just passes away. And then they release it the way they wanted to. So crazy stuff. I mean, it's very cool to talk about, you know, so many different things, you know, the dollar bill, all these things about, you know, the world's fairs and how they looked, and these grand fires in big cities that tore down different things. And did we have
great
energy?
Reset.
Right?
The reset. Great Reset.
Yeah. So very cool. I'd love, I don't know, if you think it's something that we should get into more and more, I'd love to hear more things. And, you know, Tom could probably be, like I said, that true north with it. He's really good about bringing us back to where we need to go. I think it's a great email. And it all came from a little blurb that we had talked about for maybe 2 seconds on a show. And somebody was like, hey, that's pretty cool. You guys should talk about that. So if there are more subjects that you guys out there that watch think that we should talk about, and it's not just all sports, it's the 1973 podcast. It's wide open. It's
let us know.
Yeah. Let us know, please.
Yep.
Yeah. Brad, if you had to pick one, like I asked Tom before we close this email out, what is your all-time favorite conspiracy theory?
Can I give two?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. My all-time favorite, wackiest, and probably most unbelievable is that Antarctica is a giant ice wall and there's a whole other civilization on the other side.
Okay. Okay. I like it.
That's
I
my
like
wackiest.
It.
I mean, I'm just waiting for that truth to come out somewhere. But the one I love to go down the rabbit hole, I just watched like an hour and a half YouTube the other day on it. because of technology. Andy, like what you said, man, people are making YouTubes and TikToks and Instagram accounts and going down these deep dive rabbit holes. And the one I'm constantly going back to is the 9/11 tragedy. Not saying that, you know, people didn't die, the towers didn't come down. They clearly did. But the big thing that people seem to overlook, and I talk about coincidences, towers 5 and 7 also collapsed, weren't struck by airplanes. I don't see how you could accept that as like, oh, that's part of the damage. Nothing even touched those two buildings. But a huge coincidence is, I'll give you one guess as to what prominent family, American family name was in charge of security over the World Trade Center. Anybody?
Nope.
The Bushes. What a coincidence. And I'll throw just a wild a flare out here real quick. Obama, President Obama, is a distant relative of the man who attempted to assassinate Ronald Reagan. Go down that rabbit hole if you would. And guess who that man had dinner with the night before he tried to kill Ronald Reagan? It's another big coincidence.
That?
The Bushes.
So
just going to throw that one out there.
All right. One of my favorite things I ever heard about George Bush, senior, not junior, was he was the last of the old guard that actually knew secrets that he had to take to the grave. They always said that he was the last guy in his, you know, at his clearance level or whatever, that knew everything about what's true and what's not true. And when he passed away, he was the guy that took all those secrets with him. So, you know, there's a lot of good ones. You know, there's a globe in back of me. We could, you know, I'm just putting it out there. You know, is it a snow globe? You know, that we can go with the Simpsons conspiracy theories with Matt Groening putting all those things in the, you know, in the episode. It's hee hee ha ha. I mean, the Simpsons waited like 20 seasons before they made a movie. Everybody wanted them to make a movie. And when they finally did, there's the one where the dome comes over Springfield, you know, and kind of blocks them in. So, I mean, little subtle things here and there. The one that blows my mind before we leave this about The Simpsons, because that's my all-time favorite show, is the Donald Trump frame for frame of him coming down the escalator. How they captured it ahead of time, frame for actual frame before it actually happened in real life. I mean, that's the one that's like, what the hell? I mean, same escalator, same store setup, same wave, same everything. It's like, what? is going on? So
crazy.
Blows my mind. So if you'd like to, you know, continue talking about that, maybe we can talk about a certain one every week and maybe make it into a little segment. Brad will get to pick that. We'll give Brad a segment. He doesn't seem to have a segment, but Brad's been a big part of the show. Great person. And it's awesome how we met Brad through Ed and, never actually physically met, but like I said, I said it before, as soon as I had that first conversation with him on here and he's like, I like comic books, I like this, I'm like, there's my guy right here.
There he is.
Yep. We'll put a pin in that till next time, and maybe Brad will, over the course of this week, will come up with one conspiracy to talk about every week, and we'll do a quick round table and blow Ed's mind and blow everybody else's mind, and then Tom can bring us back to where we need to be. So, speaking of that, Tom, let's do some shitty picks.
All right.
Do some shitty picks.
Tom's Shitty Picks is brought to you by Brock Street Brewing Company, located at 244 Brock Street South in Whitby, Ontario. The brewery is home to a banquet hall, an on-site restaurant, and members-only lounge. Everything they brew is done in-house, including sours, lagers, and vodka sodas. They've got something for everyone, so if you're in Whitby, go check them out and tell them the 1973 podcast sent you.
Fantastic.
All right, so I kind of nailed my 2 weeks in a row. I've nailed my pick. I had Patrick Kane going home again in Chicago, and he ended up scoring the game-winning goal in overtime. He had a goal and an assist.
It was epic. Yep. If you saw it was absolutely epic.
And it was awesome the whole day. I mean, that was, they retired Chelios' number. I mean, it was just one big thing. It was really, really good day. So this week I'm going, it's an easy one. I can't say easy because it's Connor McDavid, but everybody says he's having a bad year. The guy's second in points. He's only, as slow as his season started, he's only 10 points behind Kucherov for most points in the league. He's got 95 points right now. And this coming week, I'm going to go for the full week because I think he's going to have a huge week. He's got 4 games against Pittsburgh, Boston, Columbus, and Buffalo. And I think he's just going to have a big, big none of those goalies are really lighting the world on fire for any of those 4 teams. So I think McDavid's going to have double-digit week this week in points.
Yeah, he's just an all-world guy. I mean, he's not a tweener at all. That guy's going to have a very lengthy and very healthy NHL career. Speaking of the NHL, hold on before we move on. That Ryan Reeves fight, we got to talk about that. Tom, did you see it?
It was an awesome fight. It was a great fight, but I'm going to have this kid, Rumpy, is going to have to learn how to be a little bit more strategic with fighting because he's going old school, like 70s style, just chucking and throwing fists. And you can see his face already going into that Reeves fight. I mean, he had one full black eye. The other eye had a little bit of a shiner. I mean, I got to give the guy credit. He's 6'8", so he's a big bastard, but just he has no fear. I mean, he goes in there and he's just chucking. And I mean, 5 fights in like 6 games, I think it's been.
Crap.
He's gonna have to learn how to defend himself. And John Scott came out with a nice, with a good comment and said the same thing. He said he's contacted him and tried to give him a few tips. He said because he's going to end up with a concussion that's going to end his career early. And the kid's only 21 years old.
Yeah, I like when they talked to Reeves ahead of the game and they knew it was coming on the schedule. Not so far ahead because he just came up. And they had asked him, of course, you know how the Toronto media is. They love to hype everything. They said to him, is there going to be a fight? And he said, I don't go with a script. I don't go into any games with a script. You know, it's not like there's nothing premeditated. And he said, I understand why he's up. That's how I got called up. I didn't get called up for my scoring touch. Kind of a little comedy at the end there. And then there was a slow-mo little thing of him. You know, they got him asking for the fight. So, and Reeves is a big dude. And when you see him next to him, he was, you know, he was shorter than him and he was giving up a little bit of size. So, I guess maybe he realizes that's what he's up there for and he doesn't have a big skill set in, you know, when it comes to other things. So hopefully for entertainment value, you know I like that shit. So let's go throw some gloves. We love that stuff. Not enough of it anymore. But yeah, so to be continued, and let's get into some. Wait, hold on. I gotta pause.
There's more.
There's more. Last week we did a great interview with a young man that I was very happy to talk to, and we had another cryptic video sent in by the Phantom, and it pertains to last week, our buddy Dennis, and the Phantom is very, very impressed with the workout routine of our childhood buddy, and he put it in video form, and I am going to drop it in somewhere, probably here, right here. So, let's get into some wrestling. A lot of things going on leading up to WrestleMania. We're past Elimination Chamber. It was kind of, I wasn't too impressed with it. Went back and watched a little bit. Like Brad said, fell asleep. It wasn't too impressive. Couple of things. The social media post from The Rock with the fuck your story. on that. Brad?
Oh, The Rock is in full heel mode, period. He's and people are starting to think that this like isn't just like a temporary comeback either. You know, first of all, he comes out in his trademark Gucci shirt. He's posting to social media. I mean, almost it's almost obsessive. It is in my feed repeatedly, and it's a new post every time where he's selling this heel Rock story. He also went out and trademarked a bunch of his catchphrases. I mean, it was a laundry list of them. So I think maybe Rock may stay past WrestleMania. Maybe he's trying to plug at the next Fast and Furious movie, or he's trying to gain momentum for his independent football league, his summer league. Who knows? But he is just on a tear right now. He came out on SmackDown and introduced himself to the crowd in Arizona and just called them all a bunch of meth heads. And I was like, this is a classic. This is classic. But there were people in the stands holding signs up that said "Die Rocky, die" and all this other bullshit. So they had to black out and mute the show a couple of times because the fans were chanting so much, you know, derogatory stuff towards Rock. But classic heel Rock. We don't have a true heel WWE. I love it. I love the Drew McIntyre heel turn because he is just turned up. Keep it coming, man. I can't tell whether Rock is being a character or he is being like his actual personality, and I love it. Like the lines are blurred.
That's what we talk about all the time about that psychology for your believability and drawing you in. We're talking about it. It's interesting. It's not vanilla. You know, these characters with it's vanilla. It's a trapeze act. It's all that stuff. I mean, that's the thing I like about MJF. He's a true old school heel. And if he goes back to AEW, I think it's a step backwards for him. I thought I would never say that, but it's amazing how, if you look at the landscape, only Cody Rhodes and now Sean Spears are the only ones that have gone back to WWE. When these other guys are available from AEW, it's like they're like, nope, we don't want them. We don't want another Jeff Hardy or another high flyer or some lower mid-carder that you've seen one match, you've seen it all. So I love the direction that they're going with certain characters. I like the long-term storytelling. We've always talked about that. It's bringing you in, taking you on a ride, and you know, just enjoying yourself and losing yourself in the story. And that's the best part. Tom, thoughts on anything leading into WrestleMania?
I love the way The Rock is doing it. He is old school, and he's doing it old school style where he's blurring whether it's real or if it's kayfabe. So I like that because these young kids, that's a lost art. These younger guys that are wrestling right now, not too many of those guys. MJF is doing it perfectly, but there's few and far between the guys that are know how to do it and know how to work it. It's where you makes you think, what the hell is he like Brad said, is this legit or is this just part of the is this all work? So yeah. I really love that, and that it comes from him and his whole family being in the The whole bloodline, like Rocky Johnson back in the day. I mean, he's learned from some of the best. He's been around the business so long. He's learned from all the old guys. But yeah. I like with the I don't know if you guys have seen some of the people, some of the other wrestlers, older wrestlers that are going to be showing up at Sting's last match, which I believe is tonight.
It is tonight.
Yeah, Magnum TA is going to be there. But the guy that's not going to be there is Kevin Nash, who Sting's friends with. Nash said on his podcast he'd love to be there, but he said I'm friends with Sting, but Paul Levesque is my best friend, and I feel like I'm doing a disservice to the WWE by not going if I did go. So that's the reason he's not going.
So thoughts on
understandable.
Thoughts on Sting's last match. Does he win? Does he get screwed? Is it actually the end? I think it's the actual end, but I think there's going to be some, because they have the tag team belts, right?
Yeah.
How's that going to work?
Are the belts on the line for this tonight? So
I
maybe
don't know. Is he going to retire with the belts and then they have to go into a tournament? Or are they going to do a stupid thing where Darby Allin gets to pick his own tag team partner to replace Sting? Mm. Or what?
I think they're going to let him go out on top. That's been the kind of the theme of the, first of all, the promo they released for it was, I mean, gut-wrenching. I was like, God dang, I'm going to have to watch this now. Like, because it's just a whole bunch of childhood emotions just kind of, come up to the surface with Sting. So the promo was great. All the chatter and everything I'm seeing on all the different sites and groups that I'm in is that they want Sting to go out on top. He's ending his career on his terms, which is, unusual in this, line of work. So I think he's going to go out on top. And, what they do with the tag titles after this, I don't know. But it's the end of an era. It's Sting, man.
Yep. Yep, definitely. When Sting was, Surfer Sting. Well, let me ask you that question. Mm-hmm. Favorite version of Sting? Tom, what's your favorite version of Sting?
Just because when I was a kid, got to be Surfer Sting. I mean, I liked, don't get me wrong, I like both of them, but Surfer Sting, anything but Blade Runner Sting. That was horrible.
Okay.
With Ultimate Warrior, that was terrible.
Yeah, I don't like Wolfpack Sting with the red face. I don't like that one.
Yeah.
I thought they could have done Joker Sting. I thought that would have fit pretty good in WWF when he was there, but I realized he had such a short amount of time there. I really like the Joker Sting. Of course, I like the Crow, but Surfer Sting is my favorite. Definitely my favorite. It hits home with me from time in wrestling when it was still what I loved it to be. So Surfer Sting for me. Brad, favorite Sting?
Oh, Surfer Sting, man. I mean, it's just no contest. A part of me wishes somebody would come back out and wrestle it and just do that over-the-top neon Macho Man, Surfer Sting, Ultimate Warrior color
Bandex
vibe. Like that is the awesome era of wrestling that I think we need to get back to. Bron Breakker kind of does that. I mean, his stuff is kind of bright and over the top, but
like the Steiner brothers back in the day, they had all that stuff. And his father had the mixed match boots, which I always thought was fun. And he had the imaginary friend Alex that he used to talk to, which was great. That was cool. Sting, how can you be an old school wrestling fan and not love Sting?
Oh, yeah, man.
He never was a heel, not once in his career.
He's like the nicest guy in wrestling.
Yeah, him and Ricky Steamboat. Ricky Steamboat, too. Two guys that'll never be heels. Ricky Steamboat never was. And Ric Flair tells a fun story about Ricky Steamboat saying, hey, do you think I should turn heel? He's like, you're too nice of a guy to ever be a heel. And he never was. So, we'll have to see how it plays out. I mean, like I was saying to these guys before we went on the air, you never know. WrestleMania's right around the corner. Does he show up and help Cody? Does Dustin show up and help Cody? I mean, we haven't even got any announcements for the Hall of Fame. But next week, we're going to start previewing Dark Side of the Ring, too.
It's been, other than the championship matches, there's not a lot coming out about the rest of WrestleMania. Cody challenged The Rock. The Rock said no. Now he proposed that tag match, Bloodline versus Cody and Seth Rollins.
The screw job.
This and this. You know, but other than that, like, there's not, like, why aren't they pushing this Jey Uso story with Gunther? LA Knight and AJ Styles are feuding, but it's kind of lost in the wash. Randy Orton, Kevin Owens, and Logan Paul are beefing. But again, there's no, like, big push on these. Like, you don't see these guys at all week to week. Then they throw them on a premium live event. Somebody ruins a match for somebody, and then they're like, oh, we're going to beef, but all we're going to do is talk about it on SmackDown. Like, it's getting hard to stay engaged because we just want WrestleMania. But the cool thing about on SmackDown, other than The Rock talking for 30 damn minutes, was that Roman, he went to hit the, if you smell what The Rock is cooking, and Roman stops him. And that's where, like, that line gets blurred. We don't know, like, I mean, obviously that's, you know, part of the work. But then Roman Reigns was like, acknowledge me. And he did. But there was a little bit of tension. Like, it was, I wouldn't say that the tension was part of the work. Like, there's a real life tension between The Rock and Roman Reigns there that I think is palpable. Like, you can feel it coming through the TV.
Speaking of turns, because I think it's still going to be they're all turning on Cody. He's getting that dusty heat.
I don't know, man.
Ultimate baby face type move.
I was there last week. I was there. I think The Rock and Roman Reigns are going to implode.
You think so? All right.
Like when Roman Reigns comes out and he gives his promo and he's getting booed and nobody cheers, then the Rock's music hits and everybody goes wild. Then The Rock comes out and talks for 30 minutes and Roman Reigns is just standing in the corner with two thumbs up his butt.
You know with Paul Heyman making faces the whole time.
I almost feel bad for Roman Reigns because all the talk, it's his match. All the talk is about Cody Rhodes and The Rock.
I'll tell you what, Brad, if you were getting his paycheck, you would stand in that corner with no problem.
Yeah.
No problem whatsoever.
Absolutely.
So two passings in wrestling this week. We had one of the Rhodes family's biggest nemesis, Ole Anderson. Tom, thoughts on Ole Anderson's passing?
Four Horsemen, baby. That's what it's all about right there. He was one of the guys that started the whole thing. He was one of the co-founders of it. I mean, and it's funny because out of the four people, he was like, I won't say the worst on the microphone, but he had like the most monotone voice. And from what I understand about him backstage, he wasn't the nicest of guys either. They said he was always in a bad mood. But I mean, he was one of those guys that they were just, when it was him and Arn, they were the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, and they just fucking broke arms, man. They didn't mess around.
Yeah, and don't forget him and Gene were the original Wrecking Crew.
Yes.
And Lars was in there for a little while too. And, you know, Ole Anderson was one of those guys that legitimately got stabbed a few times. He had that kind of heat. So, you know, back in the day when, you know, a fan would actually try to kill you, you had good heat. And it's sad that when these guys pass away, people do start doing deep dives and they're like, oh shit, this guy was really decent or really good. And they always get their due after the fact. And like I think I said when we were talking about Black Saturday, the Dark Side episode, the story about him with meeting Linda and Vince. Oh, that's the best. I hope that in some way, I hope somebody tells that story in the Dark Side episode. There was a story about him, and you can check out, he's got like three or four shoot interviews on YouTube. So real cool to go back and watch those. You know, you can watch him in row and probably kill like 5 hours of nothing but Ole stories, which is really cool on like a rainy day or something like that. It's cool. Hates everybody. Everybody sucks. Everybody's the shits, as he would say. Hates Ric Flair now. They didn't put him in the Hall of Fame with the Horsemen for some strange reason. You know, they put Barry in. But he never fit in with those guys. I mean, those guys were all on Tully and Ric Flair were always carousers and going out and living that lifestyle. And Ole was always like the, you know, the square peg in the group. So I think when they finally got him out of there because he wanted to go watch his kid wrestle. You know, he was in high school or whatever, and he was really good and only wanted to take time off, and they kind of bounced him in an angle And that's how they brought in, I think Luka came in right after that. And then, yeah, the rest is history. And never had a run in WWE, never had any appearances in WWE, but definitely a Hall of Famer in my book. There's a couple of guys like that aren't in the WWE Hall of Fame. And one of the guys I think that's shortchanged is Ivan Koloff. That's one of my biggest gripes of not being in the Hall of Fame. One of the legit stars in wrestling as a villain and one of the guys to beat Bruno. I mean, so he beat Bruno when Bruno was on top. So another guy that passed away, speaking of guys that weren't really on top, Virgil. Thoughts on Virgil, Thomas? Soul Train Jones.
Let me start by saying, when I told my wife this week that these two guys passed, the first thing she said and asked was, if me or Andy, if she said, did you or Andy touch either one of these guys? Because we have a little streak. You see enough older guys in wrestling conventions and stuff. A lot of them are starting to have passed away now. So we're kind of getting the Grim Reaper reputation now. But I confirmed with her that neither one of us have touched either one of those guys. So we're clear on that one. But
well, I think we have a conspiracy theory in the works right here with y'all team.
Yup, it all started a couple of years ago when we went to a convention and we had a couple photos taken with different guys, and we came home and like a week later, like two of them passed away out of like five or six that we met. Then we went to another one and two of the guys passed away. Ivan Koloff was one of them. Pat Patterson was another one, like right after we saw him. And it just became like a thing, like, you know, don't get your picture taken with these guys because then they're going to, they'll pass away. Dusty, when I finally got to meet Dusty after all those years and didn't know that his health was failing. And like right after we met him, I'm so happy that I got to meet him, but he was not in a good mood the day that I met him because I was probably third in line. And there was literally two guys in front of me that had like rolling suitcases full of 8x10s and they put it on the desk in front of him. And he was just signing and signing and signing. And I was like, I got one thing for this guy to sign and just get a picture. And I got to wait for these two beanheads that are just getting tons of things signed. And I remember making eye contact with him. And he knew that these guys were just capitalizing on his name by just, you know. So that's the side of collecting and meeting.
Yeah.
That kind of sucks when you it's about the money and it's not about the experience. It should be all about the experience. So back to Virgil. Saw him many a times at a convention, and I really had no just wasn't my kind of guy to meet. I mean, not that I had any ill will, but Tom, Virgil, let me plug this computer in.
I am not a fan. I will say this. He was just, he was a boring. I mean, he was good.